there, and welcome to episode 83 of The Playground Project with me, your host, Tanya Pomerantz. As usual, I'm thrilled you're spending some of your time with us on The Playground. And before we start today's chat with my fabulous mystery guest, I wanted to invite you to share the podcast with a friend so other people can join us on The Playground too. And in the spotlight today is an organization near and dear to both my mystery guest and me. It's World Skills Employment Center in Ottawa, Canada. Founded by local agencies serving immigrants, LASSI, a coalition of settlement agencies in Ottawa, World Skills is a nonprofit employment center dedicated exclusively to the employment needs of newcomers and to the needs of the local labor market. They help newcomers integrate into the workforce through employment competency building, job search training and support, cultural competency building, and language training. On a personal note, World Skills is a very special place for me because I was able to work with the Empowering Racialized Newcomer Women program. I got to work with a wonderful team, and I got to meet and support the most inspiring, awesome, and fabulous women from all over the world. But why World Skills? Well, because my amazing guest today is an integral member of their team. I am so excited to introduce you to the fabulous Ledianis Rivera Sosa. Welcome, Ledianis Rivera Sosa. Did I do an okay job on that?
Yes, you did very well.
Okay, excellent. So Ledianis is, I'll tell you what, this is Ledianis, okay? This is her kind of about section and in her LinkedIn. She is a certified career development professional, that's a CCDP, with over 10 years of experience in the field. She's someone whose leadership abilities, creative power, and enthusiasm will make things happen. She's a leader who commits 100% to every project with a focus on continuous improvement, excellent service delivery, and overall optimal results. She's described by her peers as resourceful, trustworthy, and adept at improving systems and procedures. A go-getter who's extremely passionate and dedicated to her job. Someone with an amazing team spirit and an outgoing personality. Now, before we go on, I really love the little thing that's underneath your name. It says, compassionate leader, perpetual learner, I help others succeed. Well, anyone who has listened to this podcast knows how much those words resonate with me. And so, Ledianis, to have you on the podcast is such an honor. And I can tell you all of those things that are that, they are so true. They are so true about you. And how did we meet? Well, we met. Do you remember how we met?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Tanya, and for all the beautiful things you've said so far. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I feel humbled by the fact that you're saying that you're honored to have me here. I'm honored that you invited me, actually. So how did we meet? I think it was because of work. You know, when you used to work at one of our partner organizations, or CISO, doing great work there. I think that's how we met. I don't know if I remember that correctly.
You do. I was interviewed for the job search facilitator position.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right. I forgot that piece. Yes. And I was in the panel. That's right.
That's right.
And you were a volunteer there. And then you applied to become a staff. Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
Well, and I did not get that job. And I think this is just a little lesson for people that even though you might not get the job that you applied for, if you get a good kind of vibe with the people that interviewed you and they like you and they can see a place for you in the future, they very well may keep you in mind and keep you under consideration for something that's coming up. So that's exactly what happened. And then time passed. And not time passed. I was the mentorship facilitator for the FIN program. And the FIN program was always administered
through World Skills. So our paths crossed a lot. I eventually got to join World Skills. So there we go. That's how we know each other. And I'm telling you, by the end of this chat, everyone will feel the same way that I feel and that all the people who know you and have been supported by you are going to feel. So no pressure, Larianes.
Thank you. I hope that I do a good job. I mean, you're doing a magnificent job as the host. So hopefully your guest today, this person here, will do a good job too.
You're already doing a great job. So my first question, because, you know, and I love that we're both career development professionals. I'm so happy. So you know the importance of studying something and having a career in something that is you're truly passionate about. Where did you grow up and go to school?
Okay, so I grew up in Cuba, sunny, warm Cuba. And I went to school there too because I've only been 15 years in Canada, which is even less than a third of my life in this planet. So Cuba is where I became the person that I am today. I mean, I've done some changes, but yes, that's the place where I grew up and went to school all the way, you know, graduating university and all that.
Okay. And so first of all, what is the school system like in Cuba?
Okay, so there we have similar than here, elementary school, and kids start at the same age, 5 years old. Some people have what we call preschool, which is kind of 4 years old, similar to junior K here, junior kindergarten. Uh-huh. Then we go elementary school all the way to sixth grade. So it's different than here because I know here there are some in the system, there's elementary schools that goes all the way to seventh and eighth grade, which I think they call middle school. Kind of confused. And then in Cuba, after sixth grade, you go what it calls secondary school. So similar than here, but that's 7, 8, and 9. So then we continue to 10, 11, and 12th grade. And we call that pre-university. That's how it is. And the funny thing that I discovered here, I mean, talking about school as well, is that I never thought of school as something that I have a that I had a choice. Do I want to do it or not? All the way till I graduated university, by the way. So this is not talking about, you know, elementary school. It's mandatory, I think, in most countries. Like, kids go to school. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. But then when I graduated what we call the pre-university, again, all the way from 10th grade to 12th grade, I went to university like I never had a question in my mind that I had to do that, which I'm not saying it's great. I'm saying it's so different than here, right? Because here, young people have a choice. They can do this. They can take a gap year and, you know, learn more about themselves and then decide what they want to do. So there are a few differences.
Did they have college over there?
Yes. So we had, I think it's the equivalent to what college is here. Uh-huh. So, for example, after someone graduated high school, let's say ninth grade in Cuba, they had a choice to do maybe not pre-university, but they could go to an institute, which is the way they called it, to do, say, trades. You know, want to be a electrician or a bookkeeper or to work in construction, right? So they could do that after ninth grade.
And so, but for you, you knew, you really kind of, if you felt like there was no choice, you were going to university. And what did you study?
I studied English literature, English language and literature with a concentration on translation and interpretation. Imagine if that was helpful when I came here, eh?
Wow. So it's okay. So why did you gravitate towards that?
Well, I'm going to be totally honest here. When I got to, so I was in boarding school, by the way, which is a different type of school when I hear what boarding school is in this part of the world. Mm-hmm. In Cuba, the best schools were boarding schools, meaning you don't go home. You get to stay there and then you go home on the weekends. So I started boarding schools when I was 11 years old. Like, it was tiny because I'm a short person, you know me. So I was 11 because they started earlier. And what it means is that everybody at my class, was almost a year older than me. But I was there a year younger, seventh grade. And then all of a sudden, we started to learn English. It was a subject. Okay. And for whatever reason, no one in my family spoke English or anything. But for some reason, it was just like magical for me. I was the best student. I knew how to do everything. I started to speak English very easily. I would help my classmates do their homeworks.
Wow.
And it was actually very easy for me to, when grade 12 came, and then we had to make a choice about, you know, what careers you want to go into. That's how we call it in Cuba, which programs at university. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And when you're young, you know how you want to be a teacher or a doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's my first, I think. So I, too, wanted to be a doctor or a teacher when I was very, very young, you know, 7 years old, etc. But when I was ending my 12th grade, I'm like, oh, my gosh, what do I want to do? I don't know. And I remembered in Cuba, the educational system had published a book called What Am I Going to Study?
Uh-huh.
And I remember my friend saying, you know, you, because you're not decided if you don't want to do medicine. And I didn't want to do it because I didn't like the blood thing and, you know, being in the hospital and so on. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, give me the book. I'm going to read the book. So I read the book, and page by page, different programs, different careers and different ways you could become, you know, graduate university. And then I saw this particular program, you know, being a translator and interpreter. And someone said, why don't you do that? You're so good in English. That would be easy for you. And I said, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. So just by reading a book and just chatting with my classmates and friends, I said, this is what I'm going to do. So that was my first option. Because in Cuba, what you do is you could apply, I mean, include 5 options in your, let's say, first choice of bachelor's that you wanted to do.
Mm.
So my first option was this language, English language and literature. Then second was psychology. I love psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Then third was history of the arts, something.
Mm.
Fourth, I don't remember anymore. And fifth was English, but with, you know, the pedagogical one, going to teach English. So just in case I didn't get the others, because, you know, you had to do entry exams that were really competitive.
Mm.
But, I mean, I got very fortunate. I did great in the exams and I got my first option, which was English language and literature, and I graduated, many years ago.
Wow. Okay. So then did you know what you were going to do with that accomplishment?
Well, in the book that I just told you,
yes,
how I chose my, you know, next chapter in life, very important. It said, you know, potential, let's say, a type of work that you would do. Like in Cuba, you know, Cuba is huge in tourism. So I would say you can work in tourism, you can work in international trade. And it was really, everything was really appealing. So tourism, it was great because in tourism, people had better opportunities for, you know, good jobs and even probably travel, you name it, right? So it was really exciting. But I have no idea. And then I said, do I want to be a translator? I'm not very good at sitting still, writing stuff on a desk. So I'm not sure that was what I wanted there. But I don't know. I saw myself speaking in English and it made me very happy. I guess there was something in my, you know, in my destiny somehow. And now even sometimes I'm, you know, on Mondays, I'm like, oh my gosh, my English is not coming out because I live in Spanish on the weekends. That's the way I have to say that, because I hang out with Cuban people and my family, we speak Spanish. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I barely speak English today. But, you know, it's been enough for me to be able to have this wonderful job that I have and be in places where I am even celebrated. And that's really, really everything that matters now. I mean, I don't even think of how I came to do this. But I did it and it really worked out for me.
Wow. I'm smiling. I'm smiling a lot because I just know that sense of it made you happy. And, you know, you've run with that happiness and you've run all the way here. So how have you pivoted in your life?
Well, that's a big pivot right there, Tanya, all the way from Cuba to here. And it was my choice. I mean, I feel very fortunate that it was a choice. I didn't have to do it because I was in danger, because I know a lot of people have to do, you know, make decisions that they wouldn't want to make. Mm-hmm. In our case, I came with my spouse. He's also from Cuba. And we came here as skilled workers, which, you know, it's a process that you're familiar with. Skilled worker, the program from IRCC, where individuals all over the world get to apply and get some points, and then you're approved to immigrate. So that's what we did back in 2009. And this was a huge change, right, for us, leaving everything behind. We came on our own, just the two of us. Everyone else still in Cuba, mom, dad on both sides, siblings, friends, everything that we knew. This was the first time ever that I traveled outside Cuba. Because, I mean, some people listening to this may know that it's hard for Cubans to travel, or it used to be harder. Mm-hmm. It's different now because there have been some changes. But I had never, ever traveled in my life. So the first time I traveled internationally, I got on a plane to go somewhere else. And even though I was leaving everything behind, that, you know, I don't even think about that part so that I don't get a little bit emotional.
Yeah.
But even though that was really, really hard, I was so incredibly happy because it was a choice that we had made to have a better life, you know, to see a future that was possible for us and probably have our own family, which, again, I feel so fortunate to have my daughter. She was born here after we arrived. How was that? 5 years later? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Years later, after we were here, my daughter was born. And again, this is exactly that huge pivot, right? So leave everything behind, come somewhere else, looking for a better future, better opportunities for us, and also to help our families, right? Because mm-hmm. something that really made me very happy when I decided to leave our country was, oh my gosh, now I can also help my family, you know, like, because we didn't have anybody anywhere else. We were a very humble family. We didn't have anybody who could help us, or fancy houses, or even a car. So in Cuba, having a car is a luxury. Here, it's just something that you have to commute from one place to the other. No one thinks like, oh, really, you have a car? I mean, sometimes maybe for some people, but it's more, way more common. So that's one of the big pivots in my life, you know, again, leave everything behind, become an immigrant, which is something that we are forever. I mean, some people find that that's a word that they don't like to hear, but it's okay. I'm an immigrant and I'm proud of it.
I mean, literally, aren't we all, unless we were indigenous to the land, everyone else is from another country. Whether we came on our own volition is one thing, but we are all from another place. And so, yes, the word immigrant conjures up negative connotations, especially in our society right in this time. But immigrants, there's a wonderful song by Lin-Manuel Miranda, Immigrants Yes. Get the Job Done. You know? So there you were in Cuba. Question for you about Cuba. Like, Ottawa is a very driving city, right? Like, it really is helpful to have a car. It's not mm-hmm. that walkable. What's mm-hmm. the situation in Cuba? Is it public transportation system? Is it comparatively to Ottawa?
Well, in the sense that you're asking, anyone can use a car. I mean, I remember I used to work two places that I worked. So I used to work at the airport. It was my first job, actually, when I graduated university. Hmm. And it was like 7 kilometers from my house. So that was far. I couldn't walk that. There were no buses going there in a smooth way because it was outside of the city, as usually the airports are, mm-hmm. you can imagine. So I would have loved to have a way of commuting there, but I still had to. I cannot tell you the difficult process of getting on a bus to go there. Mm-hmm. We had these little small buses in Cuba that we would call aspirins.
Why?
Because of the size, I guess. I don't know. We would call them aspirin buses. So we would be there, and it was really difficult because they were, you know, a lot of people wanting to get on the bus. And anyway, So then that was in my hometown, which is Camagüey, where I'm from originally. I was born in Camagüey. Cuba has provinces like Canada. So that was the province where I was born. And the city, the capital city, is also called Camagüey.
Okay.
And then the other place that I worked was also a hotel in the outskirts of the city. It was also kind of 7-8 kilometers. And I would get on my bike to a particular point where I would then hitchhike to the hotel, because right. public transportation is really critical. But in Cuba, it's really, you know, even now, even worse, right? Because it's almost non-existent. But in those years of, you know, the 2000s, really bad, like not really reliable, when I use the right word. So yes, anybody could have used the car. And then I moved to Havana, where I lived for 3 years before I came here. And the same, Havana is huge. Havana has, well, now because of, unfortunately, Cubans immigrating, not as many people, but still it's a 2 million people city.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that.
Yes, Havana is a huge city. So absolutely, I remember when I was there, I was very new, I was doing a course, and I got on a bus to go to meet someone, because it's something that I needed to do. I had to run that errand. And I went through 4 municipalities. But because Havana is so populated, I would see the signs, right? This municipality, then the next one, you know, like when you drive and then it says Quebec or Ontario. So I would see this municipality, Playa, and then the other one and the other one. I said, oh my gosh, I'm traveling here. I was on the bus for an hour and a half, kind of, standing, by the way, because there were no seats available. And I said, this is like if I was in my hometown, there would be so much green, you know, like a green space, undeveloped areas.
Right.
Like, for example, when you go in the back roads.
Mm-hmm.
Because Havana is so populated, I wouldn't see that. I would see, it's like when you go back, you know, you go to the States and then you're, I don't know, I've never been to New York City still, but you would go and you would see places and places all together. There is no green space.
Right.
But in Havana, I would go through 4 municipalities on a bus.
Oh.
It would take me an hour and a half. And I could have done that in maybe half an hour.
Yeah.
If I was driving. So yeah, you need a car, but you cannot afford one anyway.
Jeepers. And so, okay. So there you were, not having a car and wanting to have a different lifestyle for yourself. Why Canada?
Oh, because of the skilled worker program. And I didn't want to go to the US where most Cubans go because certain beliefs that I have. I don't like how it is there.
Uh-huh.
So Canada always was very good friends with Cuba. And I had a friend who told me about the skilled workers program, how you could go online and create an account and apply. And if you got the points and you speak English, so he would tell me, you speak English, so you already have that in your on your
That's
side.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have a bachelor's and your husband has a bachelor's. So everything lined up. We didn't have the money, of course. So we had friends who helped us that I'd be forever grateful. To supply the funds that allowed us to, you know, to meet all the requirements in order to immigrate. So that's what we did in Canada, again, because of that particular program. I also had a very good friend here. I mean, she's my best friend. We studied all the years in university together. She said, you can come and stay with me until you get, you know, your own accommodation, you get job and so on. So that's why also we came to Ottawa, particularly because she was here and she said, you can stay with me until you need, you know. So, yeah.
You were reading my mind, my friend, because that was the next one. Because, I mean, Ottawa, you know, there's you know, the big ones, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and then there's Ottawa, which, by the way, I heard today was described as the best family community. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I always hear that. And even there is a Facebook group that I'm part of that's an e-commerce to Ottawa, something like that. And I always hear people say, I'm moving to Ottawa with my family. I've heard it's the best city.
Huh.
So I agree. I love Ottawa, by the way. I find it beautiful. At the beginning, it was funny because coming from Havana. Have you been to Havana, Tonya?
I have not. No, not yet.
So if you ever go to Havana, by the way, you should. So Havana is huge. It's a big city. The core of the city, which is World Heritage, etc., it's beautiful, gorgeous. Oh. So you will see areas that are really in bad shape because of the crisis and so on. But there is so much about it. I mean, the ocean. There is a huge seawall. They call it in English, but in Spanish we say malecón. Mm. It's like a big, big seawall where you can see the ocean. And I used to work blocks from the ocean, which is something that I really miss here in Ottawa, of course.
Yeah.
And when I moved from Havana to here, I'm like, oh my God, really? This is the capital of Canada? Because I found Ottawa to be a small city. You know, such different architecture because Havana has the European architecture. It's like when you go to Quebec City, the first time I went to Quebec City, I was like, this is like Havana, but well maintained.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know what? Yeah, I really did not know that about.
Yeah. So everything is very European because, you know, Cuba was colonized by the Spanish people in the 1400s. Huh. So that was my feeling when I came here. But it's been 15 years now, and I love Ottawa. And I see, of course, it's different. You know, there's different weather, there's different architecture, different culture, but I love it. Everything is clean, and the rivers, I would love for the rivers to have the color of Niagara River, it's great that it's brown. Oh, love it. It's
good. That makes me very, very happy. And so you've been at World Skills for like 14 years?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's and you've been here for 15?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, do the math. You defined a job relatively quickly.
Yes. So I got a job 5.5 months, my first job, 5.5 months after arriving, which is kind of average. I mean, you and I who worked with newcomers know that that's kind of an average. I feel fortunate because I know that it's even harder for some people as well. Uh-huh. But I got a job through networking. So I usually, when I have a chance to share with other people that are in a position where I was 15 years ago, I always say, do everything you can to get to know people, be in places where others can see you, you know, see you, the big word with capital letters. So I got my first job through networking, and even the job that I have at World Skills, well, now it has evolved, as you know, but the first job that I got at World Skills as an administrative assistant / program support was because I was in a place where someone said, oh, someone is looking for this temporary thing. Can I see your resume? And then that's it. That's how I got it. And I'm still there today, 4 promotions later, and loving what I do. And of course, in a different space professionally, but very fortunate to have been in a place in which someone saw me and wanted to help.
I really like that idea about where someone saw you. Because yeah, I mean, if people just stick around at home, and they won't get out, then they can't be seen.
Exactly. Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it in those words, but I like that. So we're in a state of flux in our world. But I'm going to ask you, you know, what's coming next? Are you able to, you know, get back to visit Cuba? Are you able to go travel? And have you been traveling and experiencing other places like Spain, for instance?
I haven't been to Spain yet. Our family, we're planning to see if we can go this summer because actually my husband has family members there that are born there. And they helped us actually when we came here. Those were those angels who gave us a hand.
Nice.
And we're trying to go to meet them and, you know, visit their kind of Alfredo's somehow homeland. His grandpa was Spanish. So we're trying to do that. But to Cuba, yes, I can travel freely. I've been to Cuba many, many times. We haven't been since 2023 because we went to Dominican last summer and it was great. We went with friends and we really had a fun time. So because this year we want to go to Spain, we might not be able to go there because, you know, it's everything about resources, right? Having financial constraints and so on. But I am happy that I can go to Cuba anytime. Right now it's really difficult because there are a lot of situations with energy and there are blackouts and so on. So luckily, I'm able to bring my parents here to visit and even my brother who finally got a visa. So I'm lucky that I get to see them. So I don't need to necessarily go to Cuba to see. I would love to see other family members and friends, of course. But at least the fact that they can come to visit me means that I won't spend years without seeing them. So I wouldn't do that better because I don't want to bring my young daughter and be in a position in which we're having a hard time during our stay, right? So, but yes, I can go and I've been there many, many times since I moved to Canada and traveling. I love traveling. I mean, we do as much as we can and take breaks from visiting Cuba so that we can go somewhere else. And I think there's a nice balance there.
I think that's cool. And now, what brings you joy in life?
Oh, a few things. I think I said this before when we came here. Something that really, really gives me joy is helping my family. I mean, especially those family members who are still in Cuba having a hard time. The fact that I can in some way contribute to their well-being there, it really, really makes me happy. Seeing my daughter grow and become a kind and loving young woman, human being, really makes me very happy. She's you know, the light of my life. Spending time with friends. I enjoy spending time with friends. I have a nice group of friends that I really, really enjoy hanging out with. I love TV and watching movies. Mm-hmm. I love gardening. So when summer comes, I have a block. I'm lucky to have a big yard. And then I do a lot of gardening. I have many flowers and I take pictures and I share with people. And I love hosting friends, hanging out and doing a big roast in the summer, mm-hmm. which is very Cuban. Big party with over 60 people. So it's really, really a lot of fun. Also dedicating time to listen to music, taking care of myself a little bit so that I'm healthy enough to be there for people who need me. And also because I need myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, those are the things that make me happy and bring me joy.
What about dancing?
I love dancing. So I do that a lot in June. And by the way, there is again the Cuban fiesta. Fiesta Cubana is going to come again in June. Now we have 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, mid-June. So you should go there, Tanya. It's gonna be fun.
I mean, to get 2 days for it, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. That says something. And so one of my absolute favorite questions to ask people, because I find it very telling, because when I asked my husband this, and maybe another person, one or two, they say they don't have one. The question is, do you have a favorite quote or words that you live by?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not super huge on quotes. I'm saying that because the other day, I think I was, when I went to Conexus, this year, mm-hmm. I think I went to a presentation and someone was saying, this someone said, and this quote, and I said, oh, I'm big on quotes. So, and you know how quotes are so, so magical. Someone said something in such, with very few words, that then becomes something so powerful. Right?
Yeah.
So even though I'm not big on quotes, I do have a couple that mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I remember once, I don't even know what I heard this for the first time, but it's the be yourself, everyone else is already taken.
Yes.
Attributed to Oscar Wilde, from what I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really, actually, I used to have this on my WhatsApp until I wrote May Health Be With Us in 2020. I changed it. This one I really care about because I'm strong believer in the power of authenticity and how you live your life and how that impacts others around you. You know, when you yourself, you help others be themselves too, because you know the value of that.
Yeah.
So this quote means a lot to me. And there is another one that I've heard more, I guess, you know, in trainings. And again, it's attributed in different ways to different people. But the gist of it is that we can control what other people do and how they decide to treat us, but we can control a response to them. And I say this to people around me all the time when they get upset because something happened, and then they say, listen, there's no way you can control what happens around us, but you can control how you react to it. What you choose to do because of something that happened, because of something that someone said, that's all you. So I really, really live by that because I strongly believe that we, by controlling our emotions and how we react to things that may be hurtful, may be complex, may be hard, if we react the way that I guess it's positive, we're making a contribution, not only to the little space around us, but to the whole world, because it's the energy, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's funny because it reminds me of one time at Conexus, I learned the difference between reacting and responding.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that that's a very powerful difference. And I think that actually right now, in light of all of the uncertainty, I think that mm-hmm. what you just said was really insightful. Like there's nothing we can do to prevent negative things happening, mm-hmm. you know, that are out of our control, but we can choose to respond to the situation in a particular manner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, I have to say, on behalf of the people that you have supported and stood up for and advocated for and just been a kind of like superhero for, I just want to say thank you, Larianis.
Oh, thank you, Tanya. I mean, I don't consider in any capacity a hero. I do very little, actually. I mean,
oh, that's not true.
What I try to do is just do whatever I can the best way I can for anybody that I encounter in my life, and not only as part of my work, but in life in general, right? So we are such a tiny part of the whole world. So in everything, anything that we can do to make our environment better, in, you know, that little circle around us, again, it would have such a ripple effect if we all did something good. So if that's a little tiny contribution that I can make, I'm okay with that, because not everyone is in this world to be Mother Teresa of Calcutta, right? So some of us are just humble people, just living our lives and taking care of our families. But even that, if we do it intentionally and with a good heart, it is good enough.
Yeah, I think that that's probably the majority of people that aren't that kind of elevated status and stature, yeah. Like, you know, famous and whatnot. But to be able to make a positive impact and on the lives of those around you is a really big gift. I want to say, and I my Spanish is somewhat limited. And when I was in Malaga with my sister last year, we were talking to her neighbor because her neighbor had a dog. And of course, you know, I get all excited about the dogs and stuff. And so I started asking, you know, how old is the dog? But I did it in French, right? Because that's more kind of natural for me. And my sister looked at me and she's like, he doesn't speak French. He speaks Spanish. And so then I tried to take words that were French and Spanishify them. It did not work at all. But I want to say to you, muchas gracias, mi amiga.
Oh, por nada. Fue un placer.
And I have the French enough to know that you said it was nothing, you know, de rien, and it was a pleasure, right?
Yes, absolutely. There you go. 5 points.
Thank you so much, my dear. Thank you for making me smile, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Well, thank you for making me smile. It was fun, and I really, really thank you for having me here tonight.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us. And thank you, Ledianis, for sharing your career journey and insights with us on the playground. Here's my big takeaway. When you're new to a country or a city or maybe new to the labor market, you need to be seen. You need to engage with others. Volunteer at different organizations. Find out about opportunities and be visible. Don't just stay at home. You need to be in places where other people can see you and think of you when an opportunity arises. Okay, another timely tidbit. Like Ledianis said, although you may not be able to control what people do or how they treat you, we can control our responses. So even though the American administration has chosen to wage a trade war against us Canadians, their longtime friends and allies, there is nothing we can do to change that. What we can do, what is in our control, is our ability to respond to these completely unnecessary and economically very dangerous tariffs. By the way, dangerous for both the American economy and the Canadian economy. So, here we are in Canada. We're taking a Team Canada approach and keeping our elbows up. Finally, I want to thank you all so much for keeping me company on the Playground Project for 2 years now. I remember when I was taking Frank, our dog, on his morning walks while listening to the MASH Matters podcast with Jeff Maxwell and Ryan Patrick. I really enjoyed it and was inspired to finally start my own podcast that I had wanted to start for 10 years. One day, I started listening to Captivate's instructional podcast about starting your own podcast. I was hooked. Our first assignment was to decide on the launch date. What better date to launch than March 8th, International Women's Day? And now, close to 100 episodes later, we are celebrating our second anniversary together. Yay! This is awesome. Speaking of awesome, please do join me and my fabulous mystery guest on the next episode of The Playground Project. I promise you, my guest is inspiring and downright wonderful. Until then, please be good to yourself, to others, to animals, and the environment. I'm really looking forward to next time when we will jump into the future together.